podcast in the world. From WWE to DNA Impact, by way of the NWA, it's time for Reffin' It Up with legendary referee Brian Heppner and guest host, Mr. Reffin' Rant himself, Jimmy Corderas. An all-new episode starts in... This is Reffin' It Up.
Welcome back to Reffin' It Up. I am RJ. I am joined by the two greatest professional wrestling referees of all time. First and foremost, from the great White North, Mr. Jimmy Corderas, the birthday boy, that is. And he's styling and profiling this week, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Brian Heppner. First, Jimmy, happy belated birthday. I know your lovely wife spoiled you, I'm sure, and packed you full of sugar, even though you're sweet enough.
Oh, well, I appreciate that, and I appreciate the shout-outs from you guys, you know, brothers. I'm at a loss for words, man. I was spoiled rotten, let's put it that way. I'm in a happy place right now. I have my Sirius satellite radio. The only two things I listen to on satellite radio are Busted Open and 70s on 7. I'm in a good place, man. I love that old stuff. And yes, you can call me that guy that says screams, get off my lawn every once in a while. But that's me, man. I'll sing it every day. And hey, you know what? To all you out there, I like Gordon Lightfoot. Tough one.
What's up, Brian?
I don't even know how to follow that.
I don't think you can.
No. All I can say is, Jimmy, if you notice what I did, I waited to give you a birthday wish after everyone was done so I didn't filter in with everybody else because I'm special, damn it. So I wanted to make it special.
Yes, you are.
And I made it to I stopped seeing any birthday wishes. And I went, now's my time. And that's why I waited so long. Not because I forgot, not because I didn't do it. I was just like, I'm not going to be like everybody else and follow up because that's what it looks like. I'm going to be special here and give them a special one in the evening when wrestling's on and everybody's paying attention.
I appreciate that, man. It meant a lot from both you guys, not just you, but both you guys. And you did what you do best. You know timing. You know when to interject yourself at the right time. That's what we do, right?
Or people tell us we don't do so.
Yeah. Whatever.
Okay.
Not going there. Not going there.
Nope.
On that note, there's no easier segue than that, guys. So why don't we send it up to our first count?
This is your one count.
It is official, gentlemen. Mercedes Moné or Money or whatever you want to. Moné, Tippy Tippy Day Day, Seinfeld episode, is all elite officially. It was official. She came out at the beginning of the show last week. I know we talked about that off air, but you know, a lot of scuttlebutt coming back from that, Jimmy. It's a matter of, okay, do you front end the episode? Do you spread it out? Obviously with the ratings that they were was, I don't want to say only, but they were only 801,000 or excuse me.
Yeah.
Yeah, 801 average. Yeah. And that doesn't include, obviously, the overrun. I believe it was like 6 minutes or something like that. But, man, it just seems like even with all these great additions of Okada and Mercedes, it's kind of like they're treading water.
It does appear that way. I will say this. Excuse me. Because usually I'm very critical of the AEW product, and people think I do it out of malice and picking. I'm not. Because I don't think any of us are picking on that. And we want them to succeed. We want them to do better. We want that because if they do better, the business as a whole does better.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with specifics to Mercedes Moné, I thought the debut at the beginning was an interesting choice because a lot of times what she would do is, you know, the worst kept secret in wrestling was that she was debuting that night and making people wait for it. You want to make people wait for it, to tune in, to wait for it. But at the same time, they have a great lead into their program with... not one of my favorite shows, Big Bang Theory.
No.
It's not on top of my list.
Mine either.
But, hey, there's a lot of viewers there, so you want to grab their attention. And her debut, they made her look like a big deal, a superstar. And I liked that aspect of it. I mean, you can pick and choose little things. Like, I like the fact that they got people chanting CEO simply from what they did on the Tron, flashing those letters on the Tron. But they didn't explain to us exactly what that meant. Because in the business world, CEO is your chief executive officer. Is that what they're referring to? Is it another phrase that we should be, you know, attached to? It's a great hook, but what does it mean?
Yeah, I'm with you, Jimmy. I didn't know what to think of that part, okay? But listen, they did a very nice job of it. I'm not going to say they didn't, okay? So I'm not saying that at all. Placement of it was horrible. And they have just got to do a much better job of making people know they're coming. Like, it was just, he just thinks that everybody knows, like, and they probably did. But what better way to A, sell tickets? What better way to get people that weren't going to watch, because she's coming on the show. She's the biggest female star on the planet right now, as far as in the wrestling entertainment business or wrestling business. I didn't mind it. It wasn't that I minded it, thought it was bad. I thought it was fine. It's just, it could have been bigger. It could have felt bigger, but I don't know. And then the Okada thing, like they've got to do something really special for him lead up, because not many people in the US know who he is. You know what I mean? And yep. They've got to tell some backstory here. They've got to do something. It's no discredit to him. He's a most very talented guy and probably one of the most talented wrestlers that we have here in the States. But I don't know much about the guy. You know what I mean? If I don't know, I can only imagine casual wrestling fans don't know either. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's just to that hardcore audience. You know what I mean? That's who gets it.
Yep. I totally agree, because the problem here is they're catering to a niche audience.
Yes.
And that's the thing. They automatically assume that if it gets out on the sheets, then everybody knows about it. No, not everybody knows about it. Some people don't bother with that kind of stuff. And like you said, Brian, you advertise it to draw an audience in. And even people who have heard the name, they may have heard the name, but not everybody watches New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Right.
So, you know, they go, oh, yes, I've heard the name and I heard he's pretty good. Let me check him out.
Right.
So now you get maybe some people tuning in. That's a disappointing thing. They've invested a lot of time. And even with Will Ospreay, who I think is really great, maybe needs to tone down some of the, some of the stuff he does, because it is a little bit risque in that. But at the same time, we're starting to see some character development in him. He's starting to see a lot of his personality come out, and it feels genuine. And that's a good thing. But you got to connect with that, not just that niche audience that we've been talking about. You got to broaden that audience. And that's where they're struggling right now.
Yeah. Yep, I agree.
And I think to a certain point that I kind of agree, but I kind of disagree at the same time of what you guys are saying, as far as Okada and Okada goes specifically, is because back, well, like I said, when you guys were in the WWE, you know, 2000s, Jimmy, going back to the 90s, what have you, the access to these guys and gals weren't what it was then than it is now, because they have a computer in their pockets. Because say they don't know Okada, they know the name Okada, because they can go into YouTube and say, okay, show me a Kazuchika Okada match, and they'll bring up Kenny's match, or they'll bring up stuff from TNA, or they'll bring up stuff from New Japan, whatever. So I think they fans know enough to go, okay, who's this Okada guy? Let me check out who he is, what he's done. You know, if this was, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, it might've been a different story. But, and I think Ospreay's a little bit more well-known because he's done a lot of stuff in the States more than Okada, which has helped him.
Well, let me ask you this, RJ, and not to argue your point, but just to combat that. How many people do you think literally sit at home and Google his name and want to see who he is and what he was?
Like the amount of people, like amount of wrestling fans?
Yeah, like fans.
I would say probably 75% of the wrestling fans will sit home and Google him.
I don't know about that, because you have to remember, you know, they say the dirt sheets, basically only 10% of fans really are paying attention to those dirt sheets. That's your really hardcore. Now, what number of wrestling fans are they saying is 10% of? I don't know all that. Okay. I'm not a statistician guy, that's for sure. Statistic guy, whatever. Yeah. But it's smaller than everybody thinks. It really is. People are going to shows and they don't know. They're not reading these dirt sheets. Yes, it's more relevant nowadays for sure. Yeah. But I don't know that wrestling fans are really getting online in a big way as far as the numbers go and checking out who Okada is, who Will Ospreay is. And a lot of people probably didn't even know what the name Mercedes Moné is or who was.
They know who she was formerly.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. That's my point.
Yeah, no, exactly. And again, just to, not to keep harping on this issue because we got to move on eventually to other stuff, but catering to that niche audience, the problem here is, and again, RJ, I understand your point completely. I get what you're getting at. And I hate to compare it to the other guys, but they're the best barometer we have out there for what is working and what is connecting with the audience, especially nowadays. They are really, really resonating with that audience. And it's different from back in the day, but back in the day, you had names like Hulk Hogan. You had names like Stone Cold Steve Austin, John Cena, The Rock, who's come back, but you know, he was there during the heyday, during that Attitude Era. They were household names. They were known across the entire wrestling world, not just to the hardcore wrestling fans. So when you brought up the name to a non-hardcore fan and said Hulk Hogan, they went, oh yeah, I know who he is. Yeah. When you said Stone Cold Steve Austin, yeah, I know who he is. Who in AEW right now has that kind of magnitude that, you know, that has that worldwide personality?
Right.
That's the issue here. They need to develop a star that resonates with a broad audience. And I like the directions they're going because they're kind of toning down the more in-ring matches and giving us some, you know, nice video vignettes, telling some stories, giving some promo time and letting people develop storylines that way. I like the direction they're starting to head. I just hope they continue it. And as we say, tighten the screws to where they are in a comfort zone where it's working for a broader audience.
Yeah. I agree.
You know, so somebody else has been tightening a lot of screws lately has been AJ Styles. We see him introducing a new character that he kind of dabbled with, but it's a WWE version of it that he did in TNA there, that darker side of AJ Styles. But Brian, I know he said something a little interesting this past week saying that, so to speak, the Vince McMahon thinking way of thinking is out the door and the Triple H way of thinking is in. I know you brought it up and we talked about it previous, but what are your thoughts on, you know, that train of thought for the boys?
I like what he said. I like what he said a lot. And basically I was trying to find it as we got on air and I can't, but it's all over. If you go to, as we talked about the dirt sheets, if you go to the dirt sheets, but basically summed it up as, the Vince McMahon way of handling things is totally different, meaning Triple H now, if say a character on TV right now on SmackDown or Raw just isn't hitting the audience properly because he feels they need to have a little bit more work as opposed to being at their disposal. He's willing to not just fire them. He wants to make them earn their way back. And that means sending them down to NXT to improve their craft. And not everyone feel like they're just a number. So he's caring more about the talent, making them feel more important. Jimmy, as well as myself, can attest the days when we were in WWE, they were brutal. We never felt safe. We never felt like we had a job for life. I worked afraid for most of my career there. And that's why I never wanted to go back. So that culture that Triple H is bringing is absolutely amazing. And I'm so happy to hear it, especially from AJ. AJ, who does not lie, who does not exaggerate. I know him very, very well and consider him one of my best friends in this business. He means what he says. He doesn't need to kiss ass, no. Put it that way.
No, he doesn't.
So he's going to speak the truth. And I believe every word that came out of his mouth. And that is ultra, ultra cool to hear. Jimmy, I know you can weigh on how it used to be as opposed to listen to this statement from AJ.
No, I'm with you, Brian. I know sometimes I felt that anxiety as well. And I know, you know, the Busted Open crew, when they did their master's class, they talked about that, the anxiety of the wrestlers. And, you know, sometimes how that builds up going into a match and worried about what the office is going to think and all that kind of stuff. And it filtered down to us as well. You know, there've been times where I've had my butt torn by the boss. Other times, you know, it's nice to get a nice pat on the back once in a while, which is a good thing. But the difference here with this new regime is that you have someone in charge who was there, who did it.
Right.
Don't get me wrong. The old boss, as great as he was as building the business to what it was, what it became, he was never an in-ring guy except for the persona that he played, the Mr. McMahon character. Triple H is a wrestling guy who gets it and has been there and has gone through the rigors of what the guys and gals are going through today. So he knows how to handle the situation properly. Like you said, Brian, if someone isn't clicking with the audience, if something isn't resonating with them, send them down to NXT where they can get some honing, work on their craft, excuse me, get to a point where they feel comfortable with the way they present themselves. Because back in the day, like you say, everybody has a darn phone where they could Google whatever they want on any particular wrestler. Back in the day, you lived your gimmick outside the ring. When you walked in an airport, if you were a dreaded heel, you didn't shake hands and kiss babies and sign autographs. You know what I mean? You just ignored people. And they talked to you, you didn't give them a second look.
Right.
Yeah. Perfect example. Look at Taker. When Taker walked through the airport, he had that holy shit from everybody looking at him because he looked menacing in the airport. He looked like the dead man.
Yeah, he did.
And lived that gimmick. Nowadays, it's harder to do that. But for, like you said, Brian, for someone like AJ to come up and say that, he's not blowing smoke up anybody's ass. He doesn't have to. He earned that right to speak his mind. And that's the other thing about this new regime. Talent is able to speak up. They feel comfortable going to Hunter. They feel comfortable in going to him. Hey, what are we doing here? What do you think you're doing in the future? And pitch ideas and give their thoughts and their feedback and everything. It's a work in progress, but it's getting to a great place. And I like that.
And you know what that does? That makes your talent comfortable. It makes your talent have confidence. And you end up having a better product because everyone's working hard. They're not working scared. There's a difference in working scared and working hard. Trust me, I've done it both ways. And I work much better in a comfortable environment, such as NWA and TNA, where I were before. It was a much different environment. And I guarantee you, and it's not just because of me. It's because of what I'm able to bring to the table. If I'd have stayed in NWA, if I'd have stayed at TNA, either one of them, I would have had a job for life. Both of those companies would have found something for me to do when I couldn't get my old ass up and maybe walk around anymore. But I'm telling you, they would find me something to do. The comfort level that Scott D'Amore, I don't know about the new regime, don't care about the new regime, not going to be in it, but that Scott D'Amore brought to me, Billy Corgan brought to me, it sounds a lot like what Triple H is trying to do. And that is amazing for the boys. And I love it. I love hearing it. Love it.
And one quick thing again, now that the guys and gals can go down to NXT to hone their craft, before it wasn't like that. You went elsewhere and you had to find yourself. And a lot of that works. You got look at guys like Drew McIntyre and others who had left the company and come back and found Cody.
Yeah.
Perfect example. Cody left and developed the American Nightmare persona, which is, again, they found their comfort zone. They found their niche. Yeah, exactly. And it's working because it feels authentic. It feels real. And that's what's missing a lot today is wrestling promo 101. Go out and scream and yell. And these guys are speaking from the heart.
Yep.
And you can feel it. And it's a big difference. And like I said, someone who is easily accessible like Hunter and willing to listen to everybody. Good move. People feel comfortable there now. And, you know, God bless him, man.
Well, last thing I want to say that AJ touched on, I forgot to bring this portion up, and it's so true. I know it firsthand. When these guys and gals get fired for unknown reasons to them, it is a crushing blow, And a lot of people, and we know this sadly, you don't see them anymore. And I don't mean in another federation. I'm talking about on this planet. It's very crushing. You know what I mean? And AJ touched on that. And it's real. It's real life. You know, this is not just a regular job. You're considered a star, and you feel like a star, and you just don't know why your star got blew out. So, it's a miserable feeling. I was very lucky that I didn't have to feel miserable. I knew I had life after WWE. My uncle, you know,
yeah, God bless him.
Yep, not so much.
He was my first mentor, man.
Yep, and he didn't. You know, he didn't take it very good, man. He didn't, and I think that was a part of his demise. But doesn't matter. I'm not asking for anybody to cry. All I'm saying is, it's hurtful when you get fired somewhere and you don't know why.
Well, something that we do know why is happening is a Refin review. So we'll be right back with that.
This is Refin Review.
Normally, guys, I would pitch it over to you, but I have a little something that I have to get off my chest, believe it or not. You know, for a long time, I sat back, I relaxed, I let you guys, you know, you guys deserve it. You guys earned that respect that you should be given the spotlight. However, this past week, on I believe it was Vince Russo's podcast on YouTube and on his Patreon, and Al Snow was on, and he and Al Snow and their co-host there, Jeff Lane, do an absolutely phenomenal job. So go check them out on YouTube. Two past guests of the show, and they talked about when are high risk moves enough, or is it just old talent being bitter? And for the most part, you know, I try to stay off of social media as much as I can. Unfortunately, with the show, sometimes that's impossible. Mm-hmm. But when I see individuals that, quite frankly, you know, I don't know if their eyes are fogging over because they haven't seen the light in probably like 4 days because they're in the basement and their mom's mac and cheese sucks. But when they come at you, Jimmy, when they come at Brian, when they come at guys like Al Snow and Vince Russo, that have been in the business, because Jimmy, you've reffed main events of WrestleMania. Brian's main events of WrestleMania. You know, you've been involved with storylines with some of the absolute best. And to say that you guys don't know what you're talking about, that's stupid. And these people are stupid, and it's just, it blows my mind. And I try to sit back and, you know, just take it in and just kind of let it seep in. But, you know, sometimes you guys say enough is enough. You guys, yourself, Jimmy and Brian, Al, Vince, and pretty much everybody, Bully, Tommy,
Crowbar.
Exactly. Crowbar was in it too. And it's just these guys bust their asses, break their bones, pull their muscles, go off the top of the ladders through tables at WrestleMania during TLC matches. And you're telling me that, oh, they're just old being bitter? No, buddy. And this is just in general to all those trolls out there that'll come at each and every one of you. You know, maybe you guys need to go outside, get some fresh air sometimes. Maybe use some Diet Coke, Diet Pepsi, Diet Sprite, whatever, so you don't have to get all that hopped up on sugar and caffeine. And, you know, maybe try some vegetables. Maybe you shouldn't really eat the cheese puffs or the mac and cheese. You know, get some good poultry in, get some meat in your body. Maybe then you can actually, you know, get in good, decent shape like Jimmy Corderas and Brian Hebner. You know, Jimmy just turned, well, I won't say his age. He's 25.
You can go ahead. Anyway, no, go ahead. Tell him, because I feel great for my age.
So Jimmy just turned 62. And granted, his lovely wife treats him like he's probably like 26, but I'm kidding, of course. But it just blows my mind how stupid people can be sometimes. And it just, like I said, I've tried to sit back, relax, and, you know, let you guys kind of just, you guys have been in the business. You guys know what you're talking about. But, you know, we've been doing the show long enough. I'm like, okay. I put in the notes. I literally put in a note, guys. I say, RJ goes off. And that's all I know, because then it'll be that switch. But anyways, Jimmy, it's just stupid.
No, I totally agree. And I did I had a ref and rant the other day about this particular subject, because what these guys don't understand is that the veterans out there are looking after the current generation of talent. They understand what it means to go into the ring. It's risky enough as it is. Like we've talked about before, you can just do something simple like a body slam or jump off the apron to the floor and blow out a knee or blow out an elbow or something goes wrong. It could be that quick. Look at the DDT on Punk, tore his tricep. And everybody's gonna say, well, why'd he? No, anything could happen at any time. And the biggest thing about what they do in the ring is to protect each other and keep each other as safe as possible in a situation where anything could happen at any time. And when you elevate that risk, it makes it harder to protect the other person because it's a two-way street. You protect each other and try to, you know, move forward with that match. And when you elevate that level, like I said, it gets harder to do. And then all these people are on social media going, yeah, but that was a great move. And, you know, I'm going to say it, twisting, burning 450 hammer Phoenix splash. They do it in a match just to get it in there. There's no reason for it. And not only do they do it, they get up right afterwards and nobody sells jack shit. You know what I mean? Like, come on, guys. And they're not bitter, corny old vets who are screaming, get off my lawn. These guys have a genuine concern for the talent today because either somebody's going to get hurt really bad, going to get paralyzed really, you know, horrible, or even worse. And that's what they're concerned about. They are looking after the safety and they are right in their concern. And there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And if you don't have anything good to say about these guys who are speaking out, then take your phone, shove it up your ass, and stop tweeting at them.
Wow. Okay. Maybe I'm going to play the part of Jimmy here. first of all, I'm just going to say this. I'm not old and I'm in better shape than half the fucking guys that are working today and bigger than half the motherfuckers. So fuck off with that shit. I'm not old and I can say what the fuck I want. And if you can shut me up, then fucking do it or try it. So I'll move off to that. Secondly, for anyone to second guess Al Snow for caring about your fucking well-being and your bodies and what you're going to endure later on, go fucking jump off the fucking Empire State Building, because that's basically what you're doing. Because like Jimmy said, none of that shit means nothing. You're popping your your thousands of fans that are just so hardcore and want to see you do this dumb shit. They want to see you do this dumb shit because it's entertaining to them, not the people. Me and Jimmy critique referees because we care about you guys. You don't get it. And another problem with today, they're soft as fuck and don't have to work like we did to be in the spots we earned. That's another problem. You're not going to do it doing the twisting, burning, fire, Phoenix, whatever the fuck Jimmy says. You're not going to get it there. And as Al said, learn how to get over by getting over with your character and not your moves, because they're going to forget after the show's over or your match is over and won't even remember that shit. Mm-hmm. So to call Al, especially because Al is my boy and he's a smart motherfucker. And he's trained a lot of bitches that are in this league and in this world of wrestling that he trained. So the ones that you're watching and popping on are ones that he fucking trained. So get the fuck out of here with that bullshit.
No, I'm totally with you. And RJ, I love your passion, man. That I love mm-hmm. coming out. I love seeing that. I love hearing that. That warms my heart. And this is like a topic that we care about. Just like those guys, all those guys, like you mentioned, Al and Bully and Crowbar and everybody out there. They're speaking from the truth. And I want to tell you one thing, though, because you guys know me. I'm not a very vocal guy when it comes to certain things. I like to hang back and see. But don't mistake my quietness for weakness. Because if you rattle the bull, I will come at you. And I will put you in your place. And you think CM Punk can drop some pipe bombs? Brother, you ain't seen shit. Because I can't.
Yeah. We just turned into an MMA show.
I think so.
But no, and I'm not being rude or disrespectful to anyone. But no. I don't expect anyone to be rude or to me. You know what I mean? Like, you know, my age and my shape doesn't matter. I just said it because I'm just being stupid. All right. But I am in shape and I am in better shape than half the fucking guys in there. But that has nothing to do with anything that I'm saying. So sorry about that. But what I'm just saying is to disrespect the guys that did the things before you and they're trying to help you. Yes, they're putting it on blast. But guess what? They want you to hear it. Mm-hmm. Simple as that. Do you think they're just spouting it to spout it? It's because they're going to what are they going to get for it? Higher pay? No.
No. They go viral on Twitter for about 5 minutes, and that's about it. And the last thing I'm going to say about the refereeing, and some guy tried to blast me on Twitter about, oh, you're just like those guys, bitter old corny, and you're just upset that you're not working. No, you know what? I'm very happy being at home with my lovely wife, who had to sacrifice all those years of me being on the road. And God bless her for doing it. You know what I mean? And for somebody to come to me and say, well, the business has evolved and the in-ring style has changed, and so has it with the referee. No, the business, the way you present wrestling in the ring can change, can evolve. Old school and new school can blend. But the one thing that doesn't change is the refereeing, because you referee it like it's a legit sport.
Yeah.
You do that all the time. The rules don't change. The rules stay the same from day one. And that's how it should be refereed. The referee's job, and I've said it, and I'll say it till the day I die, you are invisible until you need to be visible. You are there to help the talent tell their story and not get in the way and help them get to the conclusion where they want to go. You're not the guy that you haven't sold a friggin' ticket for anybody to come see you. I know all those years that I've been in the business, no one has ever paid to see me referee a match. The only anybody that's come to see me referee a match is my family, and I got them comps.
Yep.
To come. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So, hey, that's it. We don't sell tickets. We're there to help the talent, and in bad situations, check and make sure they're okay.
Yep.
And be, you know, and put their safety first. Even though you might get put on blast by somebody in the back, why'd you stop that match? Dude, you weren't there. You were loopy. You didn't know it. You were out of it. We're stopping the match. I don't care. You want to give me shit? Give me shit all day long. But I was looking out for you.
Last thing I'll say before we get out of here, because I know we need to bring in Swoggle. If any of you referees out there don't like what I say and don't appreciate what I say, because like I said, it's always to help you. If I ever come out of retirement, you better hope I don't come to your fucking promotion, because I will be the best referee that's in your promotion, and I guarantee it. And I'll be the best physically shaped referee in that business and in that ring as well. So you might be happy that I'm on the sidelines. Anyway, enough said. We're only here to try and help you. If you don't like it, I guess don't hear it then. Whatever.
I'm easily accessible. You know where to find me. If you have a problem, hit me up. I'll give you honest feedback. That's what I do. I don't cut any quarters. I am honest 150% of the time.
But they won't, Jimmy. You know that, because they're all big headed. They can't even walk through my fucking front door without fucking stopping up the doorway.
So I will say this to all those stupid marks out there that are going to come at these veterans like an Al Snow, like a Vince Russo, like a Bully Ray, like a Jimmy Corderas, like a Swoggle, like a Brian Hebner. Walk over to your PlayStation or your whatever gaming system that you have. Take that controller, shine it up real nice. Ask your mom if mac and cheese is for dinner, and then shove it up your ass, because you guys are fucking marks and you'll never be as good as these guys. With that being said, let's take a break, because I'm going to need a breather real quick before we bring Swoggle in. So we'll come back in our second count with the man, the myth, the legend, Swoggle. This episode is sponsored by Blue Chew. Let's talk about sex, guys. Should you always be at your best? Make 2024 the year to maximize your performance in the bedroom. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra, Cialis, and Levitra, but in chewable tablets and at a fraction of the cost. You can take them anytime, day or night, so you can plan ahead or be ready whenever an opportunity arises. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll be able to receive your prescription within days. And the best part, guys, it's all done online. So no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, and no waiting in line at the pharmacy. Blue Chew tablets are made in the USA and prepared and shipped directly to your door in a discreet package. With Blue Chew, men everywhere are excited to see the postman, because when your package has arrived, your package has arrived. And we've got a special deal for our listeners. try Blue Chew free when you use the promo code REFIN at checkout. Just pay $5 for shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code REFIN, R-E-F-I-N, to receive your first month free. Just pay $5 shipping. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring our show today. Chew it and do it.
This is your two count.
Welcome back to Reffing It Up for our second count. And I am stoked to bring in our guest right now because we've had some fun, to say the least, over the years. Dylan Postal, a.k.a. Hornswoggle, is joining us right now. Dylan, how you doing, man? It's good to see you.
I'm good. Good. Good to see you. Good to catch up with you. Hebner, I feel like we have met a handful of times. And it hasn't been many. I feel like when I was with WWE, you came to visit one or two times, and then there was a couple times independently for some reason. But that was, I feel like there wasn't many.
There were a few. And before I get started, I just wanted you to know that I got a message from someone that you may know who told you to fuck off, and his name is Tony Chimmel.
Well, so here's the thing. I actually knew he said that because I could feel the wind from his jowls as he said it. So, I mean, it's but also he likes to get his name thrown out there. He wants to feel relevant still, as we all do. I will not throw his name out there anymore. Besides Anthony Chimmel, go fuck yourself.
Well, since you brought it up, I will bring up his name because I remember a certain instance where you were riding with us with Tony Chimmel, Larry Heck, and I on a specific road trip, and we had a little accident where we had a flat tire
in the book Life is Short and So Am I, available dillapasta.com. I talk about it in there, where it was the four of us, and I remember I just started riding with you guys because we played cards all the time. And I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to ride with these guys. You guys invited me into the car. It was great. Also, it was a free car. Even better. So,
not to cut you off, Dylan, but for people who don't know, we had the car paid for because we were doing the ring crew at the time.
Yep. You guys were employees. So I did not.
Yes. So the talent wasn't getting their car paid for. Yeah. So you know, and we were glad to have you aboard, man. It was cool.
It was the best. But then, so we got a flat tire. And
in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, and we pulled over on the side of the road, and you and Larry hauled out all the bags from the trunk, and you started changing the tire while Chimmel and I just started trying to get semis to honk the horn by doing the diesel taunt. And it was, I remember it like it was yesterday, Chimmel and I are crying laughing because we're just getting them. And you guys at first didn't realize what we were doing. You just heard these semis honking until you saw us doing it. And I remember Larry, when he gets mad, because he's very pale skinned and he's got that bald ass head, he gets so red faced, and his not only his face turns red, but his whole head turns red. And he got so redheaded at us trying to just, because we didn't give a shit. You guys had the tire done. It was just the best. It was, man. It's one of those memories that stays with me forever of the four of us, because it was perfect, because you guys didn't know what was going on until you realized what the hell we were doing.
I was hot too. I got to tell you, I was hot too. You don't know how close you guys came to getting left on the side of the highway.
That's
that
the
night.
Best is Chimmel and I would always be in the back. You guys would always be in the front and driving. So we would always be in the back just fucking around and pushing buttons. Usually each other's until we were on the same team, and then we would push Larry's. I remember, oh man. Then there was a weekend where we watched the Super Bowl at Larry's house, and it was Packers Steelers, I remember. And it was the Packers just destroyed the Steelers, and Steelers were Larry's team. And man, it was just a blast. It was such a blast with just that was so early in my time on the road. Like that was my first car was me, Davari, Kali, and Mark Henry. Oh. And then I go from that band of misfits to the other band of misfits. And it was a blast.
The only reason you were riding in that car was you were the only one who could fit with Kali and Mark Henry.
Yeah,
in there.
So I knew Davari. I knew Davari from Independence. And you know, in the Wisconsin area. So I, when I got on the road, and I wasn't supposed to be on the road right away, but it was like 2 weeks in and they added me to house shows right away. And I was like, I don't know anything about this. I haven't left Wisconsin more than 5 times in my life. And Howard's like, all right, you're going to be riding with Daivari. I was like, great. Texted him. I had no idea he had Kali and Mark Henry along for the ride either. So I show up and I go, man, okay. This is what we're doing. And it was like a good 2, maybe 3 months of that. And Kali and I, man, we became buddies. It was just, he's the best. He truly is the best. And we would walk in and I would hold his pinky and he would just, this my son, man. This my son. He would set me up on the diner tables and it was just the best. We had such a fun time.
Were they fucking with you? I mean, how small did they really want to make you feel? God damn.
No. It was literally just because I knew Daivari from the Independence and I really knew no one else because Ken was hurt still and Kennedy trained me. So I was around him and Daivari when on the Independence before I got hired. And he was the only one I knew. So it was that I couldn't rent a car because I was underage. I was 20. I got hired at 19 before my 20th birthday. And I had no idea what the road was. I didn't own a GPS. I owned a shitty cell phone. Like, I knew nothing. I remember to this day, it was like 2 months into my being hired. They were like, hey, we're going to the Philippines for a tour. And I literally said to my dad, I go, where the fuck is the Philippines? That's how little I traveled. Legitimately how little I traveled out of Wisconsin. And I was like, I never had a passport. So they had to expedite a passport. I remember I didn't even know what a passport was. Legitimately. I didn't know any of this. The only time I remember going on a family vacation, to Toronto actually and then we saw Niagara Falls and all that. That was the only time I left the country. And that was for like 2 days. Mm-hmm. And then we just do like family vacations here and there, but that was literally it. So I knew nothing about the road. I knew nothing about traveling. So it was literally just getting thrown into the fire. But I loved it. I really, really did. And it's one of those things where working with Fit Finley, he really took me under his wing like a son. And still to this day, I text him Happy Father's Day every year. And it's one of those things where I think that's why it was a little easier for me was because I had that dad figure in Fit.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Because people underestimate that. Yes, you do form relationships in this business, but then there's some guys that you just connect with, and Fit was a guy who connected with everybody.
Everyone.
Yeah. Especially when you played. Were you there for the infamous spoon games we used to play on the road?
I remember we got Chuck Palumbo with it one time. Kenny from the Spirit Squad. We got Kevin Thorne. We got Matt Stryker. We got Brian Kendrick, who wouldn't give up. And I remember with that, I think it was Kendrick, where Fitz's wife had to literally go, David, stop. You're going to actually hurt him. And it was one of those things where I was like, man, this is great.
Do us a favor. Explain for the audience who don't know what it is. Explain to them the spoon.
So it's becoming like a thing on the Facebook watches and the Instagram reels. I've seen it where you'll have two wooden spoons. Two people will be head to head with wooden spoons in their mouth. And needless to say, without one person knowing, there's a third person behind the victim with a ladle, a metal ladle in their hand, and you put your head down, you try to hit each other with a spoon in your mouth. You're not going to get any power behind it, obviously. Fit would be the one with the ladle, and he would just whack the guy in the back of the head. It literally, at one point, I don't know how it wasn't like Bugs Bunny Roadrunner cartoons where there was just lumps over these guys' heads. But it was one of those things where everyone was a bit sleepy at that point in the night, and it was a camaraderie thing, as crazy as that sounds.
Right.
So Dylan, I know you said that we haven't crossed paths as much as we probably would have liked. All the stories I hear about you, especially from Jimmy and Tommy and a bunch of other people. But we were in Fayetteville, North Carolina at a comic show or Comic-Con or whatever you call it.
Yes, sir. Yep.
And you were at the bar and you were by yourself. And I don't know if you remember this or not, because we were at a bar and I had slipped up a chair and you looked over and you said, "Brian Hebner, how are you?" And I said, "I'm good, man. How are you doing, Swag?" And you said, "Good." You said, "Are you allergic to a little man?" And I was like, "No." You were like, "Slide over." I was like, "All right." And me and you drank for hours. And I don't even know what the fuck we talked about.
Good chance that happened. I will not deny that. I was at the hotel bar by myself because I was probably, it was the end of the day. I have to have a nightcap here.
It was at It was definitely at night at the end of the night. Yeah.
It's funny you say that because I actually met your dad for the first time at TNA. And I was, when I did my first stint there, and I was like, man, I've never met Earl Hebner in all my, and that, and that point I would have been, I mean, that was 2017. So all my time in WWE, obviously he wasn't there. And I, but like just running in, I never would have met him. It was like, oh, I'm meeting Earl Hebner for the first time. This is pretty cool. Like,
right.
It was a really, really cool thing for that too.
Now I need to be Jimmy Corderas here, and I'm sorry, but
no,
we do
go ahead.
We do have to talk wrestling, so I want
to
go
do
back
we
there.
We have to. These stories are fun.
I know. But I have to ask you, how did this whole wrestling thing start?
the most asked question ever. How the fuck did it happen?
Yeah, but it's one for everyone.
Oh, you mean I'm not the typical hire for WWE? Is that what you're saying?
You are absolutely not, Dylan. You are absolutely not.
Well, actually, hold on. If I may preface this, though, in a strange kind of way, he is.
No, yeah.
Because with that kind of where they were going at the time with the characters and stuff like
that.
Yeah,
so I started getting trained when I was 17 in Green Bay. I was backyard wrestling, and then our backyard shows were drawing so many people. The local indie company tried to get talent from the backyard to start training them, and just to make money off them. And I was like, man, I can get in a real ring. This is great. And then Ken Anderson, Mr. Kennedy, was the one doing training, but it was once a month before shows for like an hour and a half. That was my training. I will fully say I'm not fully trained at all. Never. I will fully admit that.
Wow.
But I could pull off an ass bite. Okay. so it's one of those things where I remember my first day, I told Ken, I was like, hey, I don't want to be trained to be a midget wrestler. I'll give you guys the card for this interview. I don't want to be trained to be a midget wrestler. I wanted to be a small cruiserweight. I wanted to be that. I didn't want to do the ass biting and the ref spots and the bullshit. And now that's all I do because my body likes that way more. So, but I wanted to be trained as a little cruiserweight. And I went through all the same training as everyone, all the same bumps as everyone. And that was my goal, is like, I wanted to do that. I wanted to be that because I didn't want to be I didn't want to be favored by any means. I didn't want to be, hey, no, you're good on this. We're going to do it with the other guys. I didn't want that. So then in 2003, I started training. And so in 2006, I got word that they were looking for a person like me to play a leprechaun for Finley. And I did there was a backstage segment where I did as extra work. They were with Snitsky and Goldust randomly in Milwaukee. And I overheard that they were training little people to do the thing with Fit. And I remember going up to Tony Garea or Sarge first, I went up to Fit first and said, hey, I hear you're trying out little people to be a leprechaun. Am I okay to try out? He goes, yeah, come tomorrow and we'll get you. Tell Garea. So I told Garea and we all settled it. I had a tryout. I remember going in pre-tapes and trying to do an Irish accent, and it was absolute dog shit. And I remember walking out and going to Fit. All right, well, how do you think it went? He goes, not very good. I go, okay, well, this has been fun. Never going to see it again. And then 2 weeks later, they called. I kept getting a call from an unknown number. And then me being in heavy credit card debt, just kept ignoring it and throwing it to voicemail. So then I remember hearing one of the voicemails, and it was Dreamer going, Dylan, we
We're trying to give you a contract and pay you a lot of money. Please stop ignoring us. We want to pay you and give you, we want to have you hired by WWE. Please call us back. And so I called him back and he goes, why did you keep ignoring me? I said, because I have credit card debt. I'm not going to pay it. And he goes, well, you might be able to pay it now. And I was like, it was a pretty cool thing. And that's another thing like I really hold close to my heart, that it's crazy that Dreamer was in talent relations and he was the person making the calls. And then like later, him and I, he's my second wrestling dad. I have Fit and I have Dreamer as my wrestling dads. And they couldn't be more different, but it works perfectly for my wrestling life how they're my dads in that. And him and I have got, have always been so incredibly close. It's just, it's, it was then off to the races. Literally, it was off to the races. I debuted that week. And like I say, 2 weeks later, they're adding me to house shows, which I didn't know about. And then a month later, they were adding me to tours. And it was, it, I remember John Laurinaitis said, hey, this is going to be a 6 month gig, just so you know. And I was like, great. And it was 2 weeks under 10 years it ended up being, which is crazy.
Wow. Yeah. Awesome. All right. So we have to go back to stores now.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Brian, I'll let you get to your story first, but really quickly, yeah. I love the Tommy Dreamer impression that he did, because Tommy is so laid back. That is exactly
him. Not even laid back. It's not caring and always monotone unless you get him laughing, which turns into coughing and choking because he's eating.
Yes. That is true. That is true. I wanted to touch on one story real quick about Fit. We talked about Fit, and so deserving to talk about Fit. Fit always gravitated to me for some reason. He really, really liked me. He liked my style of refereeing and liked my ideas and things like that. And we're on tour, and I think I don't remember. I ain't gonna sit here and try and make some shit up. I think we were in England. I know we were on a bus, and Fit's talking to me. We're talking about life, and we're talking about marriage, and we're talking about kids and all this stuff. And you know, he's very passionate about that stuff. And he says, I have something for you, and I'm going to bring it to you tomorrow. And I'm thinking, how does he have something for me? We're in fucking England. We get on the bus, and it's at nighttime, and we're all, you know how it works, Dylan. We're all sipping on beers and, you know, going down the road. He gives me this hardback Bible.
Yeah.
And hands it to me. And he says, I want you at your own time to just read it and keep it.
Yeah.
Because he knew I was a passionate dad. That was what like me and him always talked about. I still have it to this day. It's got the magnetic clip that goes around it and just snaps on it. Yeah. You can't ruin it.
I got a similar one where you talked about passion, you know, passionate dads and that. We were overseas on one of the Europe tours, and this would have been 2009, early 2009. It was the April tour. The Easter one, not the November. There was always November. There was always Easter. Mm-hmm. So this would have been the April one. And nope, it would have been the November. Yes. So it would have, I remember getting a call or calling home from the production office, calling my girlfriend at the time, and then her saying, hey, just wanted to let you know you're going to be a dad. And me hanging up immediately on her.
Oh,
immediately hung up on her. And I left the production office, and I go, and I just remember just going, nope, nope, nope. And the first person I walked past was Larry. Larry, man, I can't believe I remember that part. I've never thought about that until just now. Larry was the first person I walked past, and he goes, what's wrong? I go, nothing. He goes, stop. What's going on? And I told him, I said, I'm going to be a dad. I can't do this. I can't do this. I need a drink. And he goes, stop. And he like really talked to me, congratulated me and all this. He goes, did you tell Fit? I said, not a chance. He goes, Dylan, you need to find him immediately. And I go, nope, not. He goes, you need to. So I went, and I literally, it was like, I left Larry and I was like, I'm not going to find him. I'm not telling him. I'm not telling anyone. Fit, I immediately run into right behind Gorilla. And I go, I need to talk to you. He goes, oh God, what? What's wrong? What's going on? Because he could see it, and I go, I'm going to be a dad. And he literally dropped down to a knee, and he gave me the biggest hug, and he was emotional. And I go, why are you getting emotional? This sucks. This is not good. I can't do this. Because I was a kid. I was literally a kid. I was a 22-year-old kid. And I was like, I wasn't ready for it. And it's obviously the greatest thing ever. And he just kept saying that. He goes, Dylan, I'm telling you, man, this is going to be the greatest moment of your life. The greatest part of your life is ahead of you. And I was like, nope, this is not, I can't, I wasn't ready. And I talk about it in the book. I had the kid mentality. I had the wanting to be on the road and the road life mentality. And it just wasn't, I didn't think it was for me. I was very wrong because it's all I care about now, obviously. Mm-hmm. And right. Man, it's, but he was so like, you know, seeing fit around his family and seeing him how he is around his family is so touching.
Amazing.
Legitimately,
yeah.
Like the coolest thing.
He has good boys too, man.
Great boys. Yeah. I seeing David grow into this massive New Japan star, and now Brogan in NXT. I teamed with Brogan the week before I got hired, and we remember we FaceTimed Fit. We were teaming on an independent show in Chicago, and we FaceTimed Fit, and I said, the boys got together tonight. He goes, oh, and then Mel in the background was just screaming happy. It was the greatest thing.
That's awesome. See, it's wonderful when you can form these wonderful relationships in this business. And, you know, peeling back the curtain a little bit, sometimes there are some relationships that drive you crazy. We mentioned a name earlier that you didn't want to mention.
Yeah, the one that will not be named. Yep.
That will not be named. I won't bring up his name. But when you talk about fun stories, one of the fun things we used to do, peel back the curtain a little bit, is people used to think that you stayed under the ring the entire night from the beginning of the show. But at intermission, we used to kind of sneak you down in the dark.
Yeah. So,
but there's a lot of shenanigans.
It was different every venue, I feel. Like sometimes we'd have to do it before the show because it didn't go all the way dark. Or sometimes it was an outdoor venue for an overseas tour. And it was like we had to do it before the show. And it was, but, or we could do it right before and throw a video on the thing. Man, again, I talk about it in the book where it's like I messed with Chimmel so much from under the ring that people had no idea besides him and I, really. He would be sitting at his chair and he would have his microphone by his chair right at ringside on the ground and the cord would be under the ring. So literally just during the match, I'd slowly start to pull it and he wouldn't notice it until it was like halfway to the ring and he'd go, stop, stop. And I could see through the aprons, I could see him, but he couldn't see me. So he didn't know where I was under there. And I was just in front of him the whole time. And he'd go, stop, that's enough, that's enough. And I'd see him reach for it, and I would pull it under the ring fully. And it was, the sound would be on sometimes, so you'd hear just during the match, dunk, 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 over the loudspeakers. And he'd go, you give it a, and fuck, he would just be cussing me. Or it would be like the Boogeyman's entrance. The Boogeyman would be coming out. He had his match. All the worms in that would be under the ring. So then during the match, I would just pull up the curtain a little bit and start throwing the worms at him under the ring. And he would get so pissed off. He tried one time, he tried to get like smart with the microphone and he tied it, the cord around the chair that he was sitting in. And so I was like, oh man, I can't do it. Screw it. He would always put the mic on the ring because he's too lazy to carry a mic into the ring. So he'd put the mic onto the ring, he'd climb the steps, and then grab it. When he put the mic on the ring to go up the steps, I would then pull it. And I pulled the chair underneath the ring, too. I would mess with him. My goal, in my mind, I was like, if I'm going to be under the ring, I'm going to make his life hell, too. He would always have a wrench for the bell or something. I would reach out when it was dark and I would take that. And he would go, I need that. I need to ring the bell. And then he would just find something to ring it with that was there. It was just, my goal was just to just irritate him. But that's always been our friendship. Like him and I have always had that. He's had that friendship with pretty much everyone. But I truly feel like I was like a child to him, another child to him. And I would just annoy the shit out of him. And it just made me happy. It's so cliche to say, and I hate saying it, but it's like, that's how you make time go, you know, on the road and you're away from home. Again, it's so cliche, but it's true. And that was our entertainment.
Were these house shows?
Yeah. Literally all you would see, cause he would just be sitting at the, you know, in front of the barricade and people would like, I could see the fans behind him too. And they would look at the mic like, did we just see that microphone move? And then they'd look again, what the hell? And I'd miss him with worms and hit fans on accident. It was the best.
So they didn't know they were going to a magic show too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
See, but that's the thing, Dylan. you talk about having fun on the road and entertaining ourselves, and because you're away from home so long, especially on those overseas tours, well, you had to find a way to entertain yourself, and Tony Chimmel was the easiest target.
Everyone, man, you can say his name to anyone, and it's such a like a man. We and I always, man, I gave him so much shit, but it was always, I hate to put him over, I hate it.
I know.
But it's always like out of love. He has, everyone's always had so much love for him and so much like, cause he's never tried. He's just always been a good human, like as pissed off. I wouldn't even say pissed off, as frustrated as he would get with ring crews or the traveling or that kind of shit. He just always was negatively positive. If that makes sense.
Yes.
That's the most way to describe him, negatively positive.
The fun was getting him all frazzled, as we used to call it.
It was so easy, though.
Yeah.
It's so easy.
Before you joined the car, you know, because it was me, him, and Larry in the car. And because Larry was the new guy, you know, he always sat in the back.
Yep.
I always drove with my Marley lights and my Pepsi, you know what I mean? Because that's who had control of the radio. So they got sick of my 70s music all day long. Yep. In the freaking car. And then when you came in, he shifted because he felt he earned that right in the front seat. He shifted to the back just to be sitting with you.
Literally just so we could mess around. That's all it was for.
Because before that, it was Waldorf and Stadler in the front seat, as Valeri called us. And then, you know, it's like. One question I want to ask you, and I know this is really, really off the cuff. I have tons of pictures at home here that I've been finding with you in them. Like there's pictures of you and I with Todd Harris.
Yeah.
Kali and Festus.
Yeah.
And Festus at full mode, the whole thing. Best. Todd's got his pants down and stuff like that. But I found the one that I was looking for, thanks to my wife, because she found it. I didn't know where it was. You in the overhead compartment on the airplane. And so, I'm still to this day don't know how you got up in there.
I climbed when I was in my lighter, more athletic state. I remember... climbed on the seat, and then I climbed on the back, like the headrest of the seat, and I just got up. And then I remember doing it, so that was easy, and I was just like, I wonder, because it was literally came out of, I wonder if I could fit up there. And it was great. I fit great. I remember then going, oh man, what did it turn into in my mind? I was like, I can fuck with Chimmel like this on the bus. So I climbed in the overhead on the bus before he got on. And I knew where he always sat. He was always at the card table, or he was always in the front. So I remembered getting up there, and I think Larry knew I was, or Fit, someone knew I was. And they were like, okay, we need to make sure Chimmel sits here. We started the ride, and literally I reached down and I whack, slapped the shit out of Chimmel's head. And he goes, what the fuck? And he looked behind him, because I popped back in. He's, what the fuck? And he can't see. He blur. He was just trying to blame anyone. He fucking turned back. Whack again. I got him again. And he then saw me, because everyone was just dying laughing. So he gets up, and he just starts slugging me up in the overhead of this bus. But the issue was, I couldn't get down, because falling off of that, coming down from that, for me, is like falling off a building compared to you, Normie. Good.
Oh, so you'd fit in with today's wrestling. You just fall. Too bad there wasn't a pane of glass there you can go through.
Yeah.
You know,
sorry,
Dylan,
I had to go there.
You know, you talk about working with Fit. You talk about work with a lot of these great talents that you work with, Kali, Mark, Henry. But talk about being an honorary DX member with Triple H and
mascot.
Shawn Michaels.
Mascot, they say. They always said a mascot. But I'll consider it a member. I threw glow sticks. I did pyro. I was essentially X-Pac. It was when they came up to me that day, because it wasn't supposed to happen. Like it wasn't in the sheets that day at all. Like plans got changed that day of when we started the storyline and the angle. And the story goes, I remember Triple H coming up to me and telling me later how it happened. It was me and Chavo in the ring before the show, like going over our segment. And Sean goes to Hunter. He goes, hey, you know, my kids really, really like him.
Hunter goes, Chavo? No, Hornswoggle. And then it was literally like, yeah, he goes, what if he was part of us? Like, what if he joined up with us? It would bring the kid audience and all that. And it was like, oh, that's, and then the rest is history. It was great. And it was one of those things where easily one of the biggest things I've ever done in my whole career. And I remember on overseas tours, I talk about it a lot now, where it's like, we would throw the glow sticks and I would look at these parents that would be on their cell phones on the internet, on the house shows, and the kids are having a blast and the parents couldn't care less. They're in the upper deck and I could snipe these parents with these damn glow sticks. I was so good at throwing these glow sticks. These unsuspecting parents just, and I'd see it just hit them and it was made my night. Because then the kid got roasted too, so it was a double win.
Oh. So Dylan, you, as RJ just said, worked with a lot of top talent.
Pretty
but
good.
There weren't, yeah, well, there weren't many any bigger than Mr. McMahon.
yeah, man.
I hate mentioning his name, kind of like you do Tony Chimmel, except in a different light. But anyway,
no, it's you know what? It's the biggest storyline that I could ever be involved in. And it's the biggest thing that I could ever think about happening.
Right.
They told me that day in Green Bay at 3:30 in the afternoon, and then it was off to the race. Again, I use off to the races a lot, but that's truly how my career has always been, especially in the beginning. And in the first like 4 or 5 years, it was, hey, we're doing this, we're going this way. And then I go, yep, let's do it. And it was just, here we go. And,
how was it though? Dylan, how was it though?
It was great. I loved it, man.
Not for you, but
side
like working
by side.
Yeah, working side by side, like interaction.
I always think back like, man, I wish I would have asked more random, like when we were sitting back in the back waiting to do a pre-tape or that kind of thing, or going over something and we just have time and he's on his BlackBerry and I'm just kind of sitting there twiddling my thumbs. I wish I'd been like, hey, so what really happened with nails? Or like, hey,
right,
what was this random thing? Whose idea was it for the moving rings at WrestleMania? Like, I don't give a shit about the dirt stuff. I want to know about the moving rings at WrestleMania. I want to know about, hey, who designed Sid's pyro? Like, that's the random shit that as a fan growing up, I care about and that I want to know the ins and out of. Because that's what's interesting to me. And I wish I would have asked more questions. That's something I really regret, is not like picking his brain more, because he would have answered, because he always was. But to go back to the question at hand, it's like I look back at, I think it was the 15th anniversary of Raw, and I had 5 segments on the show. I opened the opening segment, I had, and then the 3 other segments during the show, with a pose off with Hulk Hogan, and then the closing shot of the whole show, the 15th anniversary, easy for me to say, was me pouring beer on Vince. And it's stuff like that. Like I would have never dreamed of that storyline and any of that.
That's amazing. And the other thing you brought up earlier, which I love with the DX thing, is how things can change on the fly.
Yeah.
And how merely just saying something off the cuff sparks something in somebody's brain and says, you know what, maybe we can go somewhere with that.
Yeah, it's a lot of things with me there were that way, and I'm very, very grateful for it. Again, we talked about it earlier, I'm not the 6'5", 250 hire that in 2006 that you had to be, so, or and any time for, you know, in wrestling history mainly. But it's for me to be able to do all of the things I've done, it's very like, all right, everything's aligning for once. Here we go. We're doing it.
Cool.
Awesome.
One quick question. Sorry, Brian, to cut you off.
Go ahead.
I'm backtracking again, because you said you were in the car with Mark Henry and Daivari and Kali. I drew Kali duty for a little while when Daivari had other duties to do. And did he ever stop at Denny's with you guys in the car? Because every once in a while, I know, because driving with him, it was Jimmy, we stopped at Denny's.
I found out why, because it was Denny's and sometimes Cracker Barrel, but that was it. That was literally it.
And the reason was is because he could order. He knew what he could get there. And that was why he could actually be the one to order without feeling like an idiot.
I get it now. I get it now. I never asked. I didn't bother. Were you there the time?
That's exactly what it was. Cause I remember getting sick of it and being like, all right, guys, yeah. Come on now. Come on.
Yeah. We got to do something. You had enough. I haven't been to a Denny's since.
Yeah. 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 And Daivari literally goes, he knows what he wants and he knows he can get what he wants and he can order it himself. So he feels like he's part of it.
Were you there the day at TV when he was eating the chili?
No.
Oh, shoot. Too bad you weren't there.
No, yeah, but I ordered him a hamburger one time.
You did?
I did, because he got up and I go, man, he got up from the table to take a phone call. And so I ordered for him and I was like, you know what? He's had nothing but chicken breasts forever. Let's get him a burger. They put it in front of him and it's cow, which, in his culture.
Right, right.
Not good. It's not good to eat, obviously.
Right.
And he looked at me, goes, what the fuck, man?
Yeah.
And I go, eat it. He goes, no, what the fuck, man? And he looked at me and Daivari goes, what did you do? And I go, I ordered him a burger, something different for once. He goes, he can't eat that. I go, oh no. Oh, I really did fuck up. Yeah. Yeah.
No, because one time at catering, they had chili.
Yeah.
And, chili's made with beef.
Yep.
So we're walking into catering, and I was walking with P.S. Hayes and Larry and just, I think the unnamable guy that was usually in the picture there. But as we walk in, we see him eating chowing down on this chili, like he's loving it. And we all looked at each other and goes, who's going to go tell him?
Yeah, no.
And P.S. of course, I'll go. And then, so he gets over there and he says, hey, Kali, is that good? Yeah, good. You know what's in there? Yeah, beans. He goes, yeah, but there's ground beef in there too. He goes, no. He says, yeah. He goes, really? Yeah, good. And he just kept eating. I guess for one day he broke the code. Put aside the thing.
Yeah.
Hey, Dylan, here's what we're going to do, man. Because we're having too much fun, it's gonna get carried away, and you're gonna be like hating being on our show.
You're good.
we're gonna get out of here, hit to our third count, where we're gonna have some fan questions, we're gonna have some Jimmy questions, we're gonna have some RJ questions, and some Brian questions, of course.
Perfect.
And we'll do that and get you out of here and give you some plugs and all that stuff. But we're gonna do that when we come back in our third count.
This is your three count.
We are back with our third count. Thrilled to have Swoggle in here with us this week. Dylan, man, we got a question from a good buddy, MGB Graham. He says he's seen you all over from Cleveland to Virginia, and even up into Canada, up into Jimmy's neck of the woods, up to Border Town Wrestling in Canada. But he wants to know, what are some of your favorite moments on the indies?
AIW down in Cleveland is my second home. It's the promotion that the promoter John Thor and I have become legit best friends.
Hey Dylan, what does that mean? The letters?
Absolute Intense Wrestling. They've been around, I think, 15 years now, or maybe longer. I forget. Probably longer. I just concussions and vodka I enjoy.
None of that.
AIW in Cleveland is a second home. I remember having a Fans Bring the Weapons match with Britt Baker there, which was like, looking back on it, she's the at one point, and if whenever she comes back, will be again the number one women's wrestler in the world. And so to have that notch on my belt is awesome. My company, ACW Wisconsin, we run our Water City Wrestling Con events once a year, and in addition to our monthly shows, and to be able to have that going is awesome. Each and every year is great. And independently, like, just starting our school, we have a school and running that, and for 8 years now, it's everything I do. Last weekend, St. Paddy's Day weekend, I had Chicago on Friday, and then two small town USA shows in Iowa on Saturday and Sunday. And I remember getting, it was a lot of driving. I hate driving. I'm too old now.
But I remember getting through the loop and getting home late Sunday night. And I remember going, man, that was just fun. It's just like there's times where travel sucks and you get delayed or this, or it's just like a shitty merch night or that kind of thing. But it's no matter what, it's like I'm my own boss. And if I wasn't my own boss, I'd be really okay with that too. But it's I still love it. The minute I stop enjoying it, I have to stop. I just have to stop, because it's work. I don't want to go to work. I don't want a 9-to-5 yet. The 9-to-5 scares me. The thought of a 9-to-5 scares me. It's gonna happen someday. I know it is, but for now, I'm really enjoying what I'm doing.
That's awesome to hear. I love hearing that. I have a question from, again, going back to the wrestling days. There was you were involved in a little angle, of course, with Mr. McMahon and JBL, who proceeded to do a number on you. Yeah. Now, a lot of people, like I'm good buddies with JBL. We were golf buddies from back in the day when we used to occasionally have that Monday night off.
Yeah.
You know, on the road and stuff like that. And a lot of people have this misconception because they thought, oh, he beat the living crap out of you. And he took liberties with you. He didn't public enemy you at all.
No, from my recollection. Everyone, you know, people say bully in wrestling, and he's always one of the people that people bring up. And it's like, no, he was great to me. I have nothing, no negative things to say. That angle where he beat the shit out of me in the cage, he had to. It had to be a serious thing. And he said to me beforehand, he goes, hey, I have to lay it in tonight. And I said, yep, absolutely. Absolutely you do. And it was one of those nights where I was like, I know this is going to suck, but if he doesn't lay it in, it throws the whole thing away. I got to the back, and everyone was so happy with it. That's what matters. If you go to Target, if you work at Target and you don't do your job the way it's supposed to or to its full ability, you probably should get reprimanded. He ain't going to get reprimanded for not doing it to the full ability.
Absolutely. And you know, hats off to you for taking it the way you did, because, you know,
I knew I had to. If it doesn't turn out, I knew I was going into the biggest story of my career.
Yeah.
So I knew that if it shit the bed, so to speak, it was like, okay, what are we doing this for?
Yeah. And people have this misconception that he's taking liberties, and he's not taking liberties. Like you said, he came to you beforehand, and
not only that, he doesn't have to.
Right.
No one's outright trying to hurt anyone. This isn't the mob. Like, it's not that.
Yeah. Like I said, unless you're public enemy and you change the finish walking out of gorilla. Because I was there for that. My goodness.
Man, that's such another time. Like, another such a different time. Yeah.
And if I could just one quick last thing on that subject is that got a lot of heat on the internet when people talked about it. Especially even recently, because it was like a 25th anniversary of the beatdown. It could have been a whole lot worse. Not only because it was John and Ron, they were snug, let's put it that way. Sure. But they could have been.
It was such a different time, and that doesn't make it right, no matter what. But it's can't live in the past, man. You can't.
Exactly.
So, Dylan, I wanted to get your thoughts on this. I've been wondering this for a while. You obviously worked with the Big Show, correct?
Yeah. Deathly afraid of my people.
That's where I was going.
Yeah, this randomly just got brought up the other day, too, and I don't know how. But I remember, so I didn't know about this. But
well, let's just say real quick, before you get into this, let's just set this up for a minute. I was working with Big Show. I was actually riding on his bus. Me and him were very, very close. And if I'm not mistaken, I really believe it was Fit that like fucked with him about it. Yeah. And we actually had a altitudinally disadvantaged human being go to the building. He was a guest.
I'm just
show.
Watching. I'm watching Hebner's face as how uncomfortable he is trying to describe one of my people.
I mean, I don't know what to say, and I don't want to disrespect you at all, because goddamn, Well, okay, a midget.
Yeah, thank you.
He brought them backstage.
Hebner's getting canceled next week.
No, as long as we play the disclaimer ahead of time, we're okay.
I already gave you guys the card this episode. You're fine.
Okay. All right. Cool. All right. I'm out.
Yeah, no. So it was definitely because you guys, it would have been Mini Gold Dust. It was traveling for TVs for a while there. And that's who it would have been. Or okay. No. You know what it was? It was when they did the minis division, the juniors division on SmackDown.
Oh, you're right.
Division for a while. And yeah. Every week. Because I sent a tape in. I remember sending a tape in for that. And never hearing back. I remember that to this day. Wow. It was the juniors division on SmackDown, which would have been where he would have been around him all every week. You know, they're on the show every week for a while. So yeah, I found out like 3 weeks later after I got hired, maybe even more than that, because SmackDown was with ECW and Big Show got moved to ECW.
Oh no.
And Big Show would, I remember like, what I heard was he pulled up in his car service and he wouldn't get out because he saw me walking in.
That's so funny.
Like I was, because he always changed in TV locker room then. So mm-hmm. He knew I was in the regular one or maybe even the extra talent one. But I never like, and then I remember the first time a couple weeks in going up to him to shake his hand and he came off as such a dickhead. I remember because I was like, He's just being an asshole, whatever. But he goes, no, he was like deathly afraid of me. Regal was too. Regal was uneasy about little people as well for a long time. But Big Show was, it was literally like the elephant and the mouse. I come to find out later. Then like after a while, he and I became so close. And
really?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really, really close. And he said to me when he goes, man, you got me over my fear. Just being around you, and it literally got me over my fear of little people. So it's great.
That is great, and it just goes to show you people don't realize, you know, his heart is really as big as he is.
Yeah, he was always the best, man. He would, I saw him at the gym table, break so many tables and decks of cards. Just, he would get the most mad at the gym table easily the most mad.
So how do
hold
on, Jimmy. Let me
no, real go, quick. Go, bro.
Follow up here. So, what did it take for y'all to become close? Because obviously, that was a big fear of his. It was
probably seeing me in my sleepy states eased his way. Just on the bus, just being around each other, literally just being around each other. And then, like, because then he came back for WrestleMania 24 with Mayweather, and then he was back on the road, you know, full time. And he was always on SmackDown. And so we were always around each other, literally every week and every house show and all the tours and all that.
So he couldn't avoid you.
It wasn't even long. It wasn't long of being around each other where we were just hanging out. And it was great.
That's awesome. A real quick question. Again, off topic, really off topic, because you mentioned playing cards and all that stuff. Does anybody still owe you money from Beal?
No, I
you collected?
No, I owed... Towards the end of my time on the road, we would do our international tours and gin games. We would just start playing double or nothing. And I ended up paying someone like $1,700.
Oh,
it was because I just kept going double or nothing and there'd be a skunk.
Triple or quad.
Oh. It was just, man, I wrote a check that next week, but it was one of those. I loved it. I still play literally like, I laugh about it now because the local establishment in Oshkosh here, me and my older friends, who I am the youngest guy by about 40 years, on Wednesday afternoons we play gin. So it's kind of one of those things where it's kind of a fun throwback.
Were you in WWE when we still got draws?
Yes. Yep.
You know the saddest days are when you get your draws and you go home without it?
You'd literally go to Korea to pay your card debt. Dylan, did you lose again?
Yeah.
And some of those places, we'd end up, staying at places that had a casino in it. Yeah. And
Corderas. That was the best. Corderas searched out casinos like you'd search out gas stations when you were at
I had a bit of a problem back in the day. Let's just put it
I
that
loved
way.
it. I loved it. He would have his he would get out of the car with his cigarette and go, well, might as well throw some chips down.
That's so funny.
Oh boy. So we have a question here from WWE Master. He wants to know, do you remember being pitched the idea of Vince McMahon killing off the Hornswoggle character by throwing you off a bridge?
No, I know nothing of that. I saw okay. that. I've like that randomly popped up one time. I think it was like on a Reddit thing. I knew nothing about it. And I was like, oh, is that a real thing? Then I think Brian Gewirtz or something commented on it, or it was like from his, like a script or something. And I was like, oh, well, that would have sucked.
kidding.
What did he say?
No, apparently it was pitched, right? It was pitched in creative, and somebody said no. My understanding.
I have no idea. I never heard of it until it came out like a couple of years ago.
Yeah, somebody brought it up in a creative meeting. They said, no, let's not do it because, you know, if you pitch it to Vince, it's happening.
Yeah, exactly. Thank God it didn't.
Yeah.
But they were going to put you in a pillowcase. Like, how the fuck you fit in a pillowcase and he's going to pick it up and throw it? Come on.
I'm assuming they would have put a dummy in. Thank God.
Forget the pillowcase. I still can't believe you fit in the overhead.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
And past that little measuring gimmick at the gate for carrying baggage.
Awesome.
So seeing that, you know, you talked about the promotion that you're running there in Oshkosh, you're talking about a lot of these great memories that you have, but you also talked about your son.
Yeah, man.
Getting your son in the business, helping your son.
Not
dude,
yet.
That's... soon as I said that, a smile came on your face. So I know that it means a lot to you.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's all he wants to do. It's all, I shouldn't say that. He has a very big passion for wrestling. He's been around it all his life. Obviously.
How old is he?
14 going on 18. But so I'm not going to get him started yet. Our school starts at 17. And I said, since day one, I said, I'm not going to make an exception for my son. If he wants to start at 17, great. I'm going to explain it to him very, very, matter of factly, like, hey, this isn't the end game. This needs to be a possible backup plan. It can't be the end game. Because there's nothing, I tell my students day one, I go, there's nothing you can do to get yourself hired. You can be the best out there, you're the best going today. And if they're not looking for someone like you, you're going to be working independence, which is great. But that's a hobby. It's a hobby. Until treat it as that, until you make it not a hobby. He goes to our school once a week by himself and he just does his thing. And it's, he's good and it's scary. It's very, very scary. He's 5'11 at 14 years old and he's only growing.
Wow. Would you say, Dylan, how tall is he?
5'11?
5'11.
At 14?
At 14.
Fuck. Wow. How does that work? How does that fucking work?
Mailman was obviously a basketball player.
How does that fucking work?
What DNA?
It's gonna be crazy, man. He's smart. He's smart when it comes to wrestling. He gets it, and it's his passion. It really is. He runs a wrestling figure fed. He loves his wrestling figures, but then he loves getting in there, and he loves with ACW helping me out with that stuff. And it's just stuff like he picks up on it so quick. It's scary.
Who's at your school with you? Who is it? You and who?
It's me and my best friend since third grade, just a local independent guy, Nick Colucci.
Okay.
I've known him since third grade. We best friends ever since, got trained together, and he's still working. And I say, he's the in-ring guy and I'm the vocal guy on the outside. So but it's we make it work and we're having fun.
That is cool. And that's the main thing, having fun. And really, back quickly to your son. I love the fact that you explained it the way you did to him, but also what's the other best piece of advice can you give him other than maybe be a sponge, just absorb and listen and learn constantly? You never stop learning in this business.
The biggest thing I tell all my students is never stop being a fan. We are doing this for one reason, and that's because we love wrestling. We got into wrestling. We're wrestling fans. I got into wrestling through wrestling figures. That's legitimately my backstory. Is I loved the toys because my brother was playing with them, which made me love wrestling, which made me become a fan, which made me want to do it.
And the minute we stop taking our fan out of us at whatever age we are, you think you're above it. And that's not good. You think you're above it, and you think you, not even a know-it-all, but you think you like should be doing it better than they are, and you could be. No, you fucking can't. Otherwise, you'd be there. Like, that's right. The thing. And the minute you stop being a fan, is I feel it's awful.
You know, Dylan, and I say this because I admire you so much.
Oh, thanks, man.
And I wish, and I really do, because there's so many boundaries you had to hop over, you know, to be where you're at. I mean, listen, they have federations that I've seen before with little people wrestling and stuff like that.
They don't want to pay me enough.
Right, right. They've got, and that's what I'm saying. You were reluctant to go that way. They have shows out there that are on TLC.
They're killing it. They're absolutely killing it. They're on Discovery Channel. Like,
yeah,
it's a huge thing right now. There's like 4 or 5 midget companies in the nation, and it's I'm glad they're getting work. I truly am, and I'm happy. I'm very, very happy for them. It's just not my thing at this point in my career.
Well, here's my question to you, though. What do you think was what would be hindered to you, which is obviously your size? What do you think was you were able to overcome and say, you know what? I know my size, but you know what? I'm getting this break. I got this call from Tommy Dreamer. I'm going to do and make the best of my abilities, the best I can. Like, what was your mentality? There's got to be a mentality there.
No, to be honest, there wasn't. I knew I was given a contract. I knew I was given an opportunity, and I was just going to go with it. I was going to do everything they told me, they asked of me. Everything they wanted, I was going to pull off. And I, after a while, I was like, I'm going to get fired tomorrow. But you know what? I had this run. And my dad actually said to me, when I got released, he was the first person I called. And then it was Kurt Hawkins was the second one. And the first person I called was my dad. And he goes, hey, don't be down. I said, he goes, this sucks. And I know this sucks. You just lost your dream job. I know it sucks. He goes, but what you need to realize is you were never supposed to make it.
Right.
And you made it. Right. And you not only made it, but you made it for 10 years. He goes, don't fucking burn bridges. Don't talk shit because you don't want to be one of them.
Right.
Just talk shit. He goes, they gave you your absolute dream for 10 years. You can't ask for much more than that.
That's good advice, too, by the way.
It was like, it was one of those things where it sucked. It fucking sucked getting released. But also, then you brush yourself off, and that was the next call of calling Hawkins, Brian Myers, and him going, stop fucking crying. Let's get to work. And I go, all right, let's fucking go here. It was awesome. That's how I live. I really, really live. And it did take me a little while to think about that and think about, like, man, I was lucky to have that. And now I look back on it because I'm old and I go, man, I was lucky to have that for 10 years.
Right.
And it's one of those things I look back on it so fondly.
Who gave you your release?
It would have been Chrono.
Mark Chrono called. Oh, that
it was during a mass release.
Yeah.
Oh, that piece of shit.
It was. There was. I think there was 11 or 13 of us. So it wasn't just me. It was a group of us for budget. It was a budget cut one again. I knew it was coming. At that point, I was off the road for a year and a half. I knew it was coming. I legitimately knew it was coming.
So what started that trickle down effect, Dylan? Like, why were you off the road for a year and a half?
They just didn't have anything for me at the time.
Creative has nothing for you.
Yeah, that kind of happened to me, Dylan. Dylan, they you know, I fucked up. Yeah, I did. I fucked up, and they sent me home. And then they told me to call them back in 30 days, but I'll still get paid. Okay, and I called Johnny fucking fuck you asshole Laurinaitis, and he says, we don't have anything for you. I said, are y'all stopped doing matches? I don't get it. What the fuck?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's, I mean, it's with me, it was like, it was frustrating, but also I'm still getting paid and I'm getting paid well.
I was too.
Getting to sit with my son, my child son. I get to sit at home and raise him and still get paid every week, my contract. I sat back and I went, okay, it could be worse. It really, really, in all reality, it could be worse. I opened my school. I opened my promotion. All of that while I was off the road with WWE. So it was like,
They didn't have to be honest, did they have to pay me my contract? Sure. They could have released me 2 months in to being home.
Right.
It was a year and a half of getting a paycheck. So I can't, right. I can't bitch about that.
Yeah. All that talk, it just reminds me of this saying that that sits with me to this day that I learned over the years, especially, you know, coming from the world of wrestling where we come from, where they say there's no losing, only learning. There's no failure, only opportunity. And there's no problems, only solutions. And that's what you did, my friend. You did all three of those.
And that's what it is. I live in now because I can change now. I can't change going forward. Mm-hmm. It's how I live my life, and it's great. I'm very, very thankful for everything they gave me.
I am too, and not to make this about me. It's just when I left in 2009. And people said, why haven't you gone back? What's wrong with you? You know what? I'm happy. For me, I'm happy with the career I had there. I'm happy with what I accomplished. I'm happy with the friends, lifelong friends I've made who I still in contact with. You know what I mean? I'm home.
Yep. I say all the time, I get to sign my fake name every weekend. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Right.
Then I get to do a lot of this stuff. I get to talk about what I love.
Exactly.
Well, Dylan, I want to do this.
Yeah.
And I say it every week and I mean it every time. I don't want to, but I know that your time is money. So I want you to take this time now and put out all your socials, anything you want to promote, all that stuff.
Sweet. All of my socials are at Dylan Postel, postal without the A, at Dylan Postel on all socials. My podcast, the Going Postel podcast, this week, literally dropped today. I had Nick Nemeth, formerly known as Dolph Ziggler. Nice. I had him as a nice small talk, as we call it.
Will you better invite me and Jimmy on your fucking podcast?
100%. You got it.
Easy. I'm going to be on Boasted Open this Friday with Nick and Dave. So
that'll be great. We're having a lot of fun. I've had him on, and that's available wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Otherwise, the free video version on YouTube. YouTube.com/Dylan Postel. That's it.
And again, like you said, Postel without an A, or he's going to go completely postal on me.
Exactly.
Sorry, I can't help the bad dad jokes. You know, that's Edge always call it. Yeah, bad dad joke, especially back in the day with the frolic. So I lost that. So at least I lost one thing.
Thank you guys very, very much. I appreciate it.
Chimmel told me that this would be because you're on a short episode, and I told him he was full of shit.
I just stopped replying to him.
Just put him on mute and let him think he's talking to you. Well, hey, Dylan, it was great having you on, man. It's great catching up. Guys. It's good to see you, man. You look happy. Yeah. I'm happy. Like you're in a good place, and that's what counts most, man. And good luck to your boy.
We're having fun, man. Thanks, guys, very, very much. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, Dylan.
Thanks, guys.
You are tuned to Ruffin and
Another great episode this week, gentlemen. So glad for you guys. You know, I was happy to welcome him in to get all those great stories we had out, Jimmy. I knew we were going to get that. I want to get his side of the story with the flat tire.
Yeah, it's good you got his side of the story. If you could have only seen the rage in Larry, heck, and me actually pissed off, but trying to calm Larry down because he literally wanted to leave and leave him and Chimmel on the side of the road.
Let's
get out of here.
And Larry gets hot. Larry gets hot.
Yeah. As Swinaki would say, you need it. Don't get hot, please. Larry, like I said, I was pissed, but I had to calm him down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what? Now, years later, I can look back and laugh at it.
Well, you can't laugh at it in the moment, that's for sure. But yeah, just another great episode. Jimmy, man, you keep on putting out great stuff with your ref and rants every day. I can't speak for Brian. I know he listens and watches, but just fantastic. I think the best part about it is your Kramer person. So, just plug everything you got going for you. Obviously, if... time permitting you.
No, I can't. I can't thank my camera person enough because she spoils me rotten every day, not just on my birthday yesterday. So I can't thank her enough. But I can't thank you guys enough. I love doing this every week. We have a blast and looking forward to every episode every week. And you can catch me on the Wrestling Inc. Doing usually the post Raw and Dynamite episodes, and of course my ref and rants that I do daily from Monday to Wednesday, and they're little critiques or little. Sometimes it's positive. It's not always negative, but what I like to do is offer my opinion to help tighten the screws and help make the business better. And from my point of view, and you know, you may disagree, you may not agree, but that's okay. That's what it's all about. As long as we can do it respectfully.
Right. But yeah, we're looking forward. You can follow the show's page on Instagram and the Twitter gimmick at Reffing It Up. I want to give a shout out before I send it over to Brian. I want to give a shout out to two other members of this great team that we have here at Reffing It Up. AJ McKay, who does absolutely phenomenal audio for our show, as well as JD Hoops, who just, dude keeps knocking it out of the park with our graphics each and every week, and just looking forward to seeing what they both have coming up, obviously with AJ with OBW and then JD with all his great gear designs he does help out with. But follow them. All their information is in the show notes. Yeet. Yep. Yeah.
I'm doing the Yeet thing. I'm almost going a full Pat McAfee here.
please don't do him. God, he's he is too much. That's another.
He's toned it a lot down a little bit, so maybe not enough. At least he got rid of that damn telestrator. Holy crap! Take that pen out of his hand.
Oh my God. Anyway, sorry.
It's okay.
No, but Brian, what do you got going on?
Nothing. Not a fucking thing.
toss those softballs to you.
No, looking forward to you. Listening to you Friday, my bro. You know, you're going to be on Busted Open there with Diamond Dave and Nick Nemeth. So,
yeah, I'll be on there Friday. Got that going on. I've got a lot of girls softball going on. My daughters are killing it on the field, just like their brother did. He's killing it up at Milligan University in Tennessee. But otherwise, I just, my life is this right here. I mean, it mm-hmm. really is. And I enjoy it every single week. I look forward to it. I'm excited every morning I wake up and knowing we're going to do this. And we're all working hard, man. And I love that. And it's fantastic. I feel very blessed and whatever. But you can catch me on social medias at Baby Hebner on Twitter or Instagram if you'd like. I'm not doing much lately on Instagram. I'm kind of waiting because I'm going to keep getting jacked. So the next picture I show will be like, God damn, is he on steroids? I would love that comment, by the way.
Oh, the Billy Gunn diet.
That too. Give that to me too. I don't care. But yeah, so, you know, that's it, man. And once again, what a great episode. And Dylan's a good dude, man. A good mm-hmm, dude. Mm-hmm. And I have met him several times, some that we don't remember as we discussed tonight. But guys, thank you all very much, and what a great episode.
Thank you, bro. You guys are awesome. Like I said, I love doing this every week, and it just, you know, puts me in my good place.
Well, I'll say this before we get off the air. You know, I'm presently working on some things, and hopefully at some point as things go, maybe we get a little announcement later on. So we're always working here. We're always working mm-hmm. here.
Yes.
So we'll see. So stay tuned to all that and much more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And obviously stay tuned to all our social medias for our announcement for our guest next week. As Jimmy would like to say, we're tightening up some screws a little bit with that. So until then, for Mr. Jimmy Carderas, for Mr. Brian Hebner, I am RJ. We'll see you here next week, right here on Reffin' It Up.
One, two, three.